Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of May 13th. I'm John Gibson, and joining me from beautiful Hawaii, where he's having a really nice vacation, although he's a little busy, is Jim Allen. What's happening, man? Aloha.
Aloha. Mahalo. And, thanks for all, and thanks for our listener who contacted me in Hawaii and said, but we weren't able to get together. I'm good. How are you doing, man?
Well, it's cloudy and it's kind of cold over here, but I'm sure that's not the situation over there since I didn't get into your suitcase.
Cloudy, yes. Cold, no. It's comfortable. Nice breeze blowing. After the podcast, we're gonna go out to the beach.
All right.
And actually, sort of enjoy vacation. So this is sort of the vacation edition of the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast.
Whatever. I'm sure it'd fit in your suitcase. So thanks for the invite, but.
We invited you. You got life going on. That's the problem.
That
vacation,
might be true.
You have to put life on hold a little bit.
And if I had gone, I would have missed a bunch of really fun games this weekend. So
that troubled me when I was leaving too.
It sounded like it in your voice last week. All right. Well, on this week's show, we've got a great interview with Taylor Youngman of Yomiuri. We're going to talk about the Giants a little bit and Hayato Sakamoto's record-breaking start. And the new skippers, we're going to take a look at them and we're going to handle some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Okay, so I went out to Tokyo Dome on Saturday, which was yesterday for me, and talked to Taylor Youngman. He's a second-year right-hand pitcher. No age jokes, please. That's how it's pronounced, Youngman. I asked him and made sure. And he's got this really quirky delivery with elbows and kneecaps coming at batters. He throws across his body. And, I remember the reporters when he started out last season, and he had a really good game. I think it was in Nagoya. And the announcers were saying that the batters kept telling the bench reporters that they were having trouble really picking up the ball from him.
Mm-hmm.
He has only had 9 starts here in Japan on the top team dating back to last season. And he had a tough start on Friday. He allowed 5 runs on just 4 hits, but he had 4 walks. But it really didn't matter because the Giants packed together 23 hits and scored 18 runs, so he didn't come away with a loss. So go get him next time, Taylor.
Yeah.
You know, that's the benefit of playing with a talented team that's going to score runs. Sometimes, he only gave up 4 hits, so it really wasn't a terrible start, although he didn't get to the 5th inning. You know, you don't want to go out like that. You certainly want to put in more innings and pitch deep into the game and give the team a better chance to win. But obviously, they came back from 5 runs down, and it really wasn't even a situation. But then the Giants, of course, they scored those 18 runs, and they lost 3-1 yesterday on Saturday. So that's the way it goes sometimes. Anyway, Taylor came. He said he ended up in MPV because essentially he wasn't really interested in doing an elevator gig, so to speak, and not being... he just wanted some certainty in his career, and he was at that kind of a turning point. And his agent had some ties with some teams here, in particular the Giants, and so he ended up in Yomiuri land, and here he is. So he's pitching okay, and he
spent too much time up in Yomiuri land at Kawasaki Giants Stadium.
Right. He certainly did last year, right? So we tried to find him last year and tried to, in fact, I was at a ballpark last year, and you guys always hear the stories after the fact, but I think he just left from the grounds from a different exit, so I wasn't able to get with him and talk to him and have him on the show, but we've got him this week, so let's take a listen to what he had to say.
All right, we are thrilled to have Taylor Youngman here with us of the Giants, and we tried to get to you last year. We weren't able to do it, so we're thrilled to have you on the show this time.
Yeah, I was a little bit all over the place last year. I appreciate, taking the time to talk to me.
All right, so you have a unique delivery and mechanics. How did you arrive at that style of pitching?
Really, I wasn't arriving there, man. I just, it's the way I've always thrown. You know, I don't know if it's the way my hips are, aligned or whatever it is, but I've always thrown across my body. And, you know, over the years, maybe it's gotten a little bit worse. Maybe I'm not as flexible as I used to be.
None of us.
But that's how I've always thrown.
All right, so we know that Japanese batters are great at making contact. So how have you worked on your approach in dealing with them?
Yeah, so last year is a little bit of an adjustment period. You know, the first month or two, you kind of have to just get used to the approaches because they're completely different than the guys in the States. It's just a little bit different of pitch selection, and it's just something you got to get used to. And you know, some guys adjust, some guys don't, and that's about it.
That's about it. Now, what pitches have you found that have been working for you best here? Have you like tried to add some or take some away, or just focus on control, or what have you done with that?
So originally I was more of a fastball curveball guy. You know, with these guys, they're so good at putting the bat on the ball. So I figured I needed to add a pitch. So I've been working on the slider a little bit. You know, I tinkered with it a little bit last year, and I've thrown it a little bit this year. My changeup has always been a little pitch I struggle with. So I try to mix that in, but it was just something to throw the hitters off a little bit from my fastball and curveball.
Now, I think it was either last year, probably last season, I saw you on one of those post-game hero interviews on the field right after the game. What do you think about those?
I think they're awesome. I really do. You know, it's a cool little it's a cool experience for the first time, for sure. You know, you don't get that back in the States. You may get a little interview, but it's you know, nothing like that. Getting on a stage and all the people in the stands actually stay for that interview, and you know, it's something they really look forward to. So I love it. I really do.
What was your attitude? I mean, I kind of remember you not smiling and being very serious in the interview, but what were you thinking? What was going through your mind?
You know, putting you on the spot like that in front of, you know, 40,000 people, you know, I don't know.
Well, we're just putting you on the spot on tape here.
Yeah, right? I know, you know, it's a little intimidating here, especially, you know, everybody here, you know, they don't speak English, so, you know, you're not on the same page a lot of times. So, you know, it's a little intimidating, but it was fun.
All right, now the Giants, you guys have played everybody in the Central League, and you're going to get ready for interleague play pretty soon here, but what has stood out to you about the teams in the Central Leagues last year and up to this year?
I think everybody's pretty competitive this year. You know, last year wasn't our best season. You know, this year we've come out a little bit better, and, you know, we just look forward to competing and just, you know, trying to win the division. You know, I haven't looked at the other league a whole lot. You know, like I said, there's a lot of good teams in this division.
Now, how do you go about preparing for these other teams? Because you haven't really – have you pitched against every team yet? I don't think you have. I think there's a couple teams you haven't pitched against.
In our division, I have not pitched against Yokohama. I think it's the only team I haven't pitched against. You know, last year I didn't get to throw a whole lot in the big leagues. You know, I rely a lot on the catchers, the pitching coaches, the catching coach. You know, a lot of those guys will help me out with the approach and pitch selection.
Now, your team so far this season, you've used a lot of players, a lot of foreign players, and there's a lot of competition for a spot on the roster as well. How do you approach that? Because you have to perform, or, you know, there's someone there to replace you, and you're usually training right next to them.
Right. Yeah. You know, I think that just speaks to the depth that we have on the Giants right now. You know, domestic players and foreign players. You know, we have a lot of foreign players. You know, we had some guys last year that come up from the triple digits that have done really well. You know, I think it's good to have depth, and you know, you just go out there and compete, and you try not to worry about, you know, that kind of thing, and try to do your best, and that's all you can do.
Okay, well, I know before the season I was trying to figure this out, how the stable of catchers was going to work. It seems like Abe has been mostly pinch hitting, but how's your chemistry with all three of those guys?
Yeah, so I think the way we've done it so far is I think we have three catchers that have kind of, you know, been doing most of the work. And we've had, I think each catcher has two guys they mainly catch. And I think that the chemistry of the pitcher and catcher is super important. I think I really like the way we've done it. And all three of them have performed. So, you know, it gets all of them out on the field. And they've all done well. And it keeps them fresh for, you know, all season. You know, catching's it's a tough deal.
How is your chemistry with those guys?
You know, I love all of them, man. They do a great job. And they throw guys out. You know, they're throwing their bodies around, blocking pitches all the time. So, you know, I enjoy every one of them, you know, all the guys that I've thrown to.
Now, I know Abe said he wanted to catch, and we really haven't seen him back there for an entire game. Do you see him catching a game this season?
I could see it, man. He can do anything. You know, he's such a great player, and I've seen film of him, you know, catching, you know, I don't know how many years back, but, I mean, he's a great catcher. He caught me in spring training a little bit. You know, his receiving skills are, you know, ridiculous. You know, he's very good, very soft hands. So, yeah, I could see him back there for sure.
All right, now, last one. like you said earlier, the competition in this league is really, really tight. It's fierce. I predicted a lot of close games most throughout the season, most of the way. So how important are these games every day when you go into them? I know the managers actually don't try to win every single game because they don't use the players who are available sometimes because they're gonna wear them out. So they use other guys, try to give them experience. What's your approach when you come to the park?
I think we go out there as players and we're trying to compete and win every single game. You know, we're trying to obviously compete for jobs. That's important. And, for us, we go out there and try to win every game. If you're not trying to win every game, then, I don't know why you're here. So, obviously the manager has a different perspective. They're trying to keep you guys fresh. They're looking more long-term throughout the season, playoffs, things like that. But, like I said, we're trying to win every game, and that's the only way I look at it.
All right. Appreciate the time.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me.
All right. Thank you, Taylor. I appreciate it and look forward to seeing you again. I have to apologize for that last question. It was pretty lame. I think I was thinking of him as a pitcher, and I was trying to see if he was focused on how he would contribute to the games that he's going to play in when he goes to the park. But I think I just blew that question. So it's like LeBron James told the media one day, he said, hey, be better tomorrow. So I'll try to come up with better questions. But what stuck with you when you listened to this, Jim?
Well, first of all, there was a really good question that I liked, which was about the hero interview.
Hmm.
Because it never occurred to me to ask foreign players about the hero interviews. We see them go up there. I mean, I've heard a few comments that, when guys say, look, I spoke for a minute and a half, and you repeated that in Japanese in 10 seconds.
Right. What's up with that?
My other one is the one when the guy says, I looked for a good pitch and I hit it. And the interpreter says, oh, the team was really fighting hard and the pitcher was working hard. And when I got my pitch, I wanted to make sure I put a good swing on it. And there's several varieties of interpretation going on.
Right. We were getting a little loose with the interpretation language, huh?
Indeed. Well, yes. Well, that's why it's called interpretation.
Exactly.
This is what he meant to say. So, but it was interesting, him saying that it is hard with the Japanese, not hard, but it's, you're on the different page, when you're on the spot there in front of all the people. But I thought that was kind of interesting. And the other thing that got me was, it's really rare for a starting pitcher to say, fastball curve.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know sinker slider is a common combination, and I know he's talking about his two, his primary pitch and his main secondary pitch, and then, he added the other ones. But I thought it was interesting that he said fastball curve and not fastball curve slider.
Right.
So the slider and the change are, I guess, more tertiary pitches than secondary pitches.
Right. Yeah, and I think...
So that was kind of it. I thought that's a little few for a starter, but that's just my old school, bias.
Well, I think, I think he even said, he had to come up with something else because get rid of a pitch because it just wasn't going to work here in Japan. And so I think that's part of what he was talking about in the adjustment period that he mentioned about going from this past season into this season. He needed to adjust the Japanese batters. But I expected you to say, I love how Taylor focuses on the positive and the catchers are great and the competition is great and the depth in the team is great. And obviously, we've talked to Giants players before, and it always seems like they have this sanitizer that happens to the Giants players when they sign the contract. All the great comments just get washed away, and everything comes out sanitized. And for the most part, I thought that was true with Taylor's interview, but I think he gave us a couple nuggets. One was that he said, okay, well, I said you've got these three catchers on the top team, mm-hmm. one of whom really isn't catching, who wanted to catch, said he was going to try to be a catcher this season, and that's Shinnosuke Abe trying to get back behind the plate. But mm-hmm. Obviously he hasn't really been. He's got 18 plate appearances in 16 games, so we haven't really seen him behind the plate yet, but when Taylor said, well, they're basically two or three catchers, they each are assigned a couple pitchers, but I really haven't seen Abe catching. Now, we've seen Takumi Oshiro maybe pinch hit and then catch a little bit or catch occasionally. So you've got Ginjiro Sumitani and you've got Seiji Kobayashi, and those guys are doing the bulk of the catching. And so I'll just try to pay attention more to who's catching whom and see what I can see in that in terms of that, those matchups and who's married, let's say, to one particular catcher. Because, you know, you might want to look and play some of the matchups sometimes. You know, I know Kobayashi and Sumitani are right-handed batters. Oshiro bats from the left side. So, you know, I know that when he came, when he first came up, his catching skills were what was holding him back a little bit. So if he develops that part of his game, perhaps he will take those innings that Abe is trying to get. So it's a real interesting thing there that Taylor pointed out with the marriage of the catchers. And then talking about Abe, Taylor says he had seen some video of him catching in the past and that he was really good and his hands are soft, and I'm sure that was the case. I don't know what kind of catcher he is now. We really haven't seen him do it in such a long time. And, you know, you've got Tatsunori Hara as his manager, and Hara managed him a lot during those glory days, or during his glory days. So if Hara is not willing to put him back there behind the plate, I don't know who would be. And for him to be not getting, you know, innings as a catcher tells me a lot about his physical condition. Although, when I saw them yesterday, and it looked to me, Abe was a pretty roundish kind of hitter in his prime even. He's a little bit thinner. He's gotten older, but he's gotten thinner. And he's, I would say his body mass index is probably down a little bit. So that might bode well for him in terms of getting some of those innings. And remember, I don't know if it was the preseason prediction show that I said it, but maybe he could be the guy you send out there for the ninth inning with your closer and let him catch that one inning on occasion. So maybe that'll happen in the second half. Well, this will be fun to keep an eye on it. But, you know, if they're going to carry four guys on the roster who can play the catcher role, you know, that's a real interesting aspect. I really haven't seen that a lot in top level, even in Japan, in baseball.
Well, of course, and then the fourth guy is basically a pinch hitter right now. So, you know, he's their big bat off the bench. So
right.
A lot of teams.
Well, the third and the fourth guy, I would say. I'd say Oshiro is, you know, basically a bat as well.
A lot of teams don't have those guys. You know, they have those guys who are outfielders or something and rarely catchers. So that is, I think, the unusual part. So it does give them options. Obviously, if somebody gets hurt, you know, having Abe as your emergency catcher is not really the worst thing in the world that could happen.
Probably not. And, you know, Taylor said he threw to him in the preseason, so he has really seen what he can do back there. So, yeah, I have no doubt. I just think that, you know, at his advanced age, you put him back there behind the plate. One day he's going to need 3 days to recover.
At the advanced age of, what, 35, 37 or something, or 38, he'd probably be ready for his pension in a few months. Yeah, so,
But his, I think, you know, him batting cleanup for so long, so many years, and I think it just really has taken a toll on him, not just the catching part too, but having to grind out so many at bats. I mean, you know, you get fewer at bats through the years if you're batting in the eight hole or down in the seven hole or something as a catcher. But if you're batting cleanup or, you know, sometimes I think a lot of fifth, then he got extra at bats that maybe some catchers like Tanishige never really saw. So we don't actually have to spend much time talking about them, because I think we've done that a lot this season. We've mentioned the Giants and our observations, but actually, having seen them up close now, I had two things I wanted to mention. Now, number one is when Kazuma Okamoto, when he was drafted, I really liked him physically, and I looked and I thought maybe he was, I think I called him the jewel of the draft at that point, and this is so many years ago now that I can't remember exactly what I said, but I really liked the draft pick, and I thought he was going to be really good, and he has, you know, did what no one else had done at that age, hitting 300 with 30 home runs and 100 RBIs last season. But, and I had been thinking about this since the beginning of this year in particular, but at the end of last year, but seeing him up close yesterday, he looks a little doughy. And
yeah,
and I didn't think, you know, he was a really strong physical specimen in high school, and I didn't really see him heading that direction, but he's not a full-on hard body anymore, and I'm kind of concerned about that as he goes forward. He's still very young, early 20s. For him to be that doughy and chubby looking is concerning, because I know he works hard. So I'm just wondering how he's going to age. It didn't look good yesterday. Yeah. And so, I mean, you know, he's obviously young, and you can do a lot of things when you're young that you can't do as an older player. So I hope he ages better than he has started out aging. Now, maybe they made him stop smoking the cigarettes that you talked about, and that's part of the reason, but I don't know.
It could be,
but yeah, I didn't really like what I saw yesterday. And then number two was that Yoshiyuki Kame is amazing. He's a guy you don't really plan for, you don't really think about too much as far as a big contributor or a guy who's going to be in the starting lineup a lot, and the Giants really can't take him out of the lineup. Now, he hits lefties okay. I mean, he hangs in there really well. But it looks like they're platooning him a lot using Yo Daikon or Yes We Can or whatever. I always call him that. What do you have as his official name?
Young Daikon.
Young Daikon. Okay. So Yo Daikon is his registered name here in Japan. And he's been playing some right field. And you know, the thing is, you fall asleep on him because he's a really good player. Really good arm, really good outfielder. And can hit with power, and he just hasn't really been, since he got with the Giants, he hasn't been able to put in a full season of health. But when he's out there and he's on the field, he's a really productive guy. So and gets his share of big hits. But Kame, you know, at the age of 36 or 37, I think he's going to turn 37 in July. He is just amazing. I don't know how he does it. He hasn't seemed to age. And just a really amazing player to be able to contribute like this with the Giants, with all these fast waterbug type slap and run rookies or young players coming up. He still gets his time in the lineup, still gets his at bats, and still contributes. It's just really amazing.
Yeah, and you know, as you mentioned him, he's a guy I don't think about a lot, but I have liked him. I mean, I liked him when he didn't have a job, because. Every time he played, you know, he basically was not a high average hitter. He was not a base stealer. He was not a great outfielder. But he was a guy who basically did two things well. He got on base. He drew walks, and he hit a lot of doubles and home runs, or you know, more than his share.
Yeah.
And he's a very similar player to one of my other favorite grinders, who's a Takumi Kuriyama of the Lions. And basically, they're sort of like brothers. You know, Kuriyama was the guy who could steal 20 bases and play center field. But, you know, he wasn't going to be the guy who hit 25. You know, he hit 18 home runs instead of 25 or 28. But they're both grinders. And you just got to love both of those guys.
I think that's a great comp. Yeah, that's a great comp.
But especially the other one is that I think your comment is really astute, and I think in another generation, under a different manager, if his career has started under a different manager other than Tatsunori Hara, he would have been one of those Giants players who you would have seen become a regular for the first time at the age of 29 for the Oryx Buffaloes.
because he'd been
one of the best players in the Eastern League for year after year, and he finally got bundled in a trade with, I don't know where, you know, let's say, I don't know where he's from, but if he was from Osaka, you know, or if he was a Sapporo, he'd go to the Fighters, you know, they'll say, well, you know, he's from here, let's give him a chance. And then, whoa, this guy can really play,
right, yeah.
You know, and, but that's what, that was part of the Hara revolution, which I've talked about probably till all the listeners are sick of hearing about it. But the fact that he used people who weren't big names and gave them chances to play. So, anyway, yeah, interesting. And the fact that he's still hanging in there when it looks like there's no room in the outfield for him.
Exactly.
He's still there like going, okay, punks, what else you got?
Right, exactly.
And I don't mean that in a bad way because he's such a nice
guy.
He's such a nice guy. So, you know, he wouldn't say that, but he's just immovable.
Yep. And speaking of immovable or just unstoppable forces, let's say, is Hayato Sakamoto. Now, he homered to open the ninth inning on Saturday night, but before that, on Saturday, he singled in his first at-bat, and that broke the team record, Sadaharu Ohs team record, for consecutive games reaching base from the start of the season at 35. And now next up is the MPB record, which is 40, and that was set by Steve Ontiveros of Cebu.
Steve Ontiveros. Wow.
Wow.
Well, yeah. There's a Giants connection there. Okay.
Yeah, and that was in 19...
San Francisco Giants.
Yeah, the San Francisco Giants. Okay. And so that was 1983. So you weren't even in Japan. Mm-hmm. So that was a long time ago.
I was still thinking about coming to Japan then.
So, you know, I don't think we have to do any coming of age story for Sakamoto, who is 30. He's going to be 31. Later this year. But yeah, I think part of this, because I had a discussion with Alex Ramirez when he was with the Giants at the time, and I said, what do you think of Sakamoto? It was the year he was getting close to 40 home runs, and every time I saw Sakamoto, I said, you can get to 40, man, 40, 40. Every time I saw him, I teased him, and I said, 40, and, you know, Alex was like, don't tell him stuff like that. He's going to think he's a power hitter. And I said, well, I see him as a future number three guy. I think he's a perfect number three hitter. For some reason, out of that wiry frame, he gets a lot of power. And he can hit for power, so he'll be able to do whatever you need at the number three spot. And he says, he's a better hitter. You know, Alex said, he's a better hitter when he's just thinking about making contact. So this is around 2010, and that was his high in home runs in his career with 31. So so I just begged to differ with Alex, and I said, you know, don't let him, you know, don't try to contain him. Well, now he's a triple crown threat. He's driving in runs and he's hitting almost around 350. So like I said, we certainly don't need to do a coming of age story for this guy. I tweeted out the other day that American scouts or MLB scouts have long been drooling over this guy and had hoped that he would be available earlier on in his career. And that was when his play at shortstop looked like he was asleep sometimes, because he was just so good that it didn't look like he was trying as hard. But he's a great all-around player, and I could see this continuing, not maybe at the high end, but him maybe getting close to a triple crown and leading this team into the playoffs with being the front runner as the MVP.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at his career numbers now, and I'll just throw a couple of Sakamoto tidbits in there. When he was after his first season, he said one of the things he wanted to do was hit 30 home runs, and I thought, oh, that's the one thing that won't happen. He wanted to hit 30 home runs at some point, but his main desire at that time was to cut down on his errors. I remember it took him a long time to win a Golden Glove, of which he was very, you know, it was a little later than he was deserving of winning. He did win one, yeah, a couple of years. This happens with Golden Gloves. Very often the people who win it for the first time had been deserving for a few years. But he did hit 31 the one year, but it really wasn't one of his better offensive years. So,
right.
You know, I can hear that. And it even even though it was 2010, you know, if you were going to hit 30 home runs, 2010 was going to be the year before they deadened the baseballs.
Right.
But having said that, okay, it's now 2019, and his birthday is in December. So he's right now, he's 30 years old. And basically, the last three of the last four seasons have been his career years, which is really weird. So you have to think there's something, it is unusual for a player basically who depends on his speed to be, not that he has an offensive prime like this, but that, you know, he gets better after the age of 27. He's markedly, you know, from the age of 27, he's basically flipped a switch.
Well, you know, I heard an interview with him the other day, and mm-hmm. they were asking him what is one of the keys to your success this season, and he said the fact that Yoshihiro Maru is hitting behind me in the lineup, and I thought about that for a second, and I know you hate that notion that the lineup makes a difference, but
it does make a difference. I hate the notion that it makes
the difference.
it makes players into better hitters. Players are the hitters they are.
Well, what he said was it's forcing pitchers to throw to challenge me in the strike zone. So
okay,
because they don't want to walk Takamoto ahead of Maru and give him a guy to drive in. So they want mm-hmm. him to earn his way on the base, and so they challenge him in the strike zone more. So he said he's seeing more strikes, and so if you're going to challenge a guy like that in the strike zone, who, when you look at his heat maps, he's pretty good everywhere, especially inside. He kills inside pitches on the inner half. That's a huge advantage to know that he's going to be swinging at strikes more often, in theory, because you're not guaranteed a strike in any situation.
Well, I think if it is, it's not a case of he's making better contact, but he's hitting the ball harder, and I think it's maybe he's looking for more fastballs now, because that's about the only thing. If you look at his last four seasons, okay, 2017, he had an off season when he had his kind of old typical season. It was a good one for him.
Mm-hmm.
But 2016 was really his breakout season when he had a 4.33 on base percentage. He hit, in 2016, he started hitting well over 300, 340. Let's just call him 340s. So he hit 340 with a 4.33 on base percentage. Okay, and he hit for power, 555 slugging average, which is a notch above his career best. Okay, now then what happens is, of course, it's a notch above his career best because when he hit 31 home runs, he was hitting under 300. So that's basically the difference. Okay, he had an off year in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he had a really puny 372 on base percentage. I mean, he's just a heck of a player. So I don't. You know what I see? You know what I think is happening this year? Yes, he's been looking for fastballs a little more, and he's been getting them.
I didn't say he was looking for fastballs. I said they.
No, I'm saying that. I didn't say
okay.
You were. I'm saying that's what my interpretation of this, because
he's
doing exactly the same thing he's done for three, you know, in two of the past three seasons, and he's just as successful as he was, except he's got more pop. So my guess is he's expecting a few more fastballs when he's ahead in the count, and he's jumping on them. Now I could go, but I haven't looked at the actual data yet. But that would be my guess, because he's hitting some balls a little harder than he has been in the past. But otherwise, he's exactly the same player.
Okay.
I guess he hasn't been hitting for doubles. And here's the other thing is it's weird. The number that's weird for him is the doubles. He's got four doubles.
Yeah, that is kind of, you know, on the low side.
He keeps this pace up, he's going to finish the season with 16.
Yeah, and what
which would
the
be
home
a career low.
Be
so my guess is the doubles are going farther.
Yeah.
The balls that he used to hit for doubles are now going over the fence, which is, good for him. So
yeah. Okay. All right, well, we'll keep an eye. Like I said, he'd be the front runner for MVP. And you know how the Japanese media loves to pick the easy numbers for, as the MVP. So that would be that would actually be very easy. And
well, a triple crown would be all pretty much an obvious MVP.
I think so. All right, making a four-seam transition, we want to talk about the new skippers. Now, we're not going to count Tatsunori Hara of the Giants in this group because he's back again with his ex, so to speak. So, after our break.
Okay, that's a good reason to exclude him. Okay, you should have learned your lesson the first time, buddy.
So, yeah, in the Pacific League, Norifumi Nishimura of Oryx and Yosuke Hiraishi of Rakuten. And then in the Central League, Tsuyoshi Yoda of Chunichi and Akihiro Yano of Hanshin. So let's start in the Pacific League. I'm looking at Nishimura, and you know, this is basically his fourth season in charge of a team as a manager. He spent three with the Lotte Marines, then took a break, so to speak, and then he is now in charge of he's managing the Oryx Buffaloes, which is a difficult job. I'm sure the man has a grade 8 headache. He was a coach with the team, so I think he knows a lot of the players, but I complained early about the lack of attention to detail and the some of the mistakes that this team makes. And a lot of it, I think, can be attributed to the fact that there's some young players. He was giving some young players opportunities to play, but a lot of young players spread all over the field on defense can be a recipe for disaster in terms of making just goofy mistakes or goofy plays, or somebody's nervous or they don't do something right, or I don't know. So I think he was still trying to learn who he could count on, basically, who is dependable, who's reliable, who's going to show up every day and be the same. And so we've seen a lot of mixing and matching and maybe it's almost like a hockey team where he's got a certain line that he brings in, and then the next day he gets mad at that group and he brings in, he just changes, and he changes three or four guys, and the jumbling of the lineup, it's just really hard to follow. I'm sure he can't stop the pounding that's going on in his head, and it seemed like they were on that road yesterday. I know you didn't see the games, you're in Hawaii, but yesterday they were playing this scoreless game, tight game with the Eagles, and they get a run, and then right after that they give up three runs and they lose the lead, and then somehow they rallied off of Frank Hermann and turned the game around to win. So they came from behind. It was a really exciting kind of a win, but the kind that, you know, I think I mentioned this in a tweet before, they won a game, I think, up in Sapporo this past week as well, and it's a typical game that they would lose. They do something wrong, make a bad play, throw to the wrong base or something, and lose the game, and they ended up winning. I think it was the Yoshinobu Yamamoto start that they won up there 2-1. And so, yeah, they put those games together, but they also put out some tape that you just would use at a training, in a training video, to say don't do this, you know, don't do it this way. So I'm gonna give him a good grade. I think he's getting a passing grade because he's dealing with a lot of what I called in a tweet this past week poor organizational IQ, meaning collectively the guys really don't think their way through the whole situation and the whole season, and therefore it spreads to the team at times, and they just do goofy things. I don't have any proof. I don't know. All I can, as I've said before, we never know what the plan is. We only know what the results are because we're not in the planning. We're not involved in the planning. So all we can see is the results. But it doesn't look like a lot of times that they have a real solid, stable plan in place and that they're trying to execute it. It just looks like they're just running around like the proverbial headless chickens.
Proverbial. I studied my Proverbs. I don't remember the one about the headless chickens. I guess this comes to the heading, well, you know, A, well, they're Oryx, so let's just kick them, and B, well, they're at the bottom of the table, so let's kick them again. So I don't mean to be like that. And I guess a couple of comments. Having watched Oryx a bit, I think they are still handicapped by kind of the talent selection by the organization.
Mm-hmm.
On the offensive side. Again, they seem to have really bought into the notion as an organization that the way to win in Japan is to hire as many guys who can slap and go.
Mm-hmm.
And then if somebody...
they have them all.
Yeah, but the point being, it's like they almost like a belief that power hitters are born and not developed, you know, and that they are random and almost like a lack of understanding that power hitters are something, are actually people who have skills as opposed to some sort of, like, you have to be good at rain dancing or something to have a bunch of them or something. I don't know. But they fit into that mold. Like, they don't really believe that power hitters are an actual skill that people could develop and train, because they don't seem to have any ability to get them and keep them successful for a long time. Of course, Masataka Yoshida is challenging that perception. But basically, Oryx's team philosophy, and I think there is an organizational philosophy there, and that's, let's have really good pitching and good defense, and then everything also fall into place. Because their pitching has for several years, their pitching has been consistently among the best in NPB.
True, yes.
They have, their defense has been average to better than average,
except when it counts.
I know I was going to get to that, but they do have an issue with, you know, concentration and occasionally it'll cost them games. You know, guys, and I don't want to kick the same horse. I should find a different horse, dead horse, to kick on Oryx. but the point is, they'll have players making blowing routine plays at key points in games a lot, and I say a lot. I mean, I don't mean a lot, but I mean, it happens. It seems to happen to them more than it happens to other teams. So that's kind of an issue, especially if your whole game is, we need to execute perfectly because we don't have a lot of guys who can hit home runs. So, yeah, so that's Oryx. As far as Nishimura, I don't really have a lot to add to him. I mean, he was the head coach at Lotte a long time before he was the manager. He was the head coach at Oryx for several years before he was the manager. He's very fond of sacrifice bunts.
Mm-hmm.
I could tell you one other thing about them, which I'll mention it now since we're talking about him. So Oryx has used 100, through Friday's game, Oryx has used 140 pitchers, which is tied for the I don't mean 140 individual pitchers, but 140 pitching games. Now that's the lowest in the Pacific League. It's tied with Cebu.
Okay.
So that's sort of that plays to that thing. He's not a guy who likes to pinch run, but he does like to pinch hit. So that's about all I can tell you. And he does like his sacrifice bunts.
Right.
So that's Nishimura. He's a bit old school, and I do think Oryx really has a thing for old school managers. I mean, that's what they've been hiring all along, and if your team is built along the notion that power hitting is kind of a mysterious thing that nobody can possibly predict or control or develop, then why not go with a guy who believes in small ball?
Right, right. And when you mentioned the fact that they get all these slap-and-go guys, it made me think that maybe they're hoping that one of them blossoms into the all-time slap-and-go guy, which is Ichiro Suzuki. Maybe they're looking for a guy who becomes that, but who knows? But anyway,
problem with Ichiro Suzuki was that he tried to be more than a slap-and-go. They had to keep him on the farm team because he thought he could drive the ball a little bit. No, 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 son, that's not what you do. We got to take the bat out of your hands. We're going to do it because we know better than you.
Right.
So that's Oryx.
I think he's doing fine. I think he's doing a good job. I'm not going to point to him as in terms of their losing.
I think he came in with handicaps and he hasn't.
And he's working around them. Yeah, he's working around them. All right. Let's talk about Hiraishi of Rakuten. Now, he's still just 39, so he's a young guy.
Mm.
But other than this team seemingly making about half of its outs on the base pass.
Oh, that was April. They've changed their way.
I said seemingly. I think he's really passing the test. You know, he's doing a really good job so far this season. He's aggressive. they rallied to beat the Hawks from, you know, 7 runs down the other day. They walked it off against them on Thursday coming from behind. They seem to be, they're still without their top two pitchers. That's the thing to keep in mind here. Takayuki Kishi, the ace B, and Takahiro Norimoto, the actual ace, the A ace, still sidelined, and yet this team is really competing well. And I think that's just I like his demeanor. I said that last year. I like his demeanor on the bench. And I always talk about the fact, in fact, talking about it with Taylor Youngman, saying that the managers aren't really going out with the plan of trying to win every single game every day. But I think Hiraishi stands back there and he says, with our guys, we're going to change the approach, change the plan, and we're going to try to win these games every day. So even the walk-off the other day, they had Ginji Akaminai with 2 runners on base, and I think there were no outs, and he was squaring around a bunt, and he did the butcher boy and pulled the bat back and took a swing and slapped a single up the middle that scored the winning run. So he's aggressive. I like the way he calculates and he mixes and matches. And the other thing I like, obviously, with Jabari Blash, who is a first-year foreign player who's really banging the ball for them, he's playing Rui Okoye enough, I think. He's playing the rookie Kyosuke Tatsumi enough in the outfield. I know that's a crowded outfield, and they've got some real good talented players out there, but he seems to be doing the managing part, the in-game managing, the personality managing, and getting everybody on the right page and on the same page and in the right direction, and I really like what he's doing, regardless of the results.
Well, you got to like the results, and I think, yeah, the whole point going back to is they're missing two of their key pitchers. I mean, basically, they've gotten good pitching performances from a bunch of guys that we have got become used to not expecting a lot from. You know, the good game, bad game guys. You know, good game this week, and 2 good games in a row. Maybe he's turned to, okay, no, he hasn't.
No.
kind of guys. So, yeah, I think that's it. And I think it's hard to overlook that. I mean, although Jabari Blash has been really impressive the last couple of weeks. He didn't, you know, he typically did not start out the season as many foreign players don't start out the season on fire.
Nothing
their first
new.
Season, but he seems to have made. Let's put it this way: he's making some adjustments. Because you see guys who never get the chance to make adjustments, you know, because they're out of the game before they do.
Well, he was making enough contact to be allowed to make these adjustments because, yeah.
Well, and he wasn't playing a lot either in the beginning. So he was, so it wasn't a guarantee, but obviously it didn't bother the manager that he wasn't having success right away. Although he's played, I mean, he has played in 30 games, but and his at bats are up there a lot now. He's been playing regularly, but it was not an obvious look at the start. And but the manager believed in him, and the organization apparently believed him and in him, and he made some adjustments. And now he's going to get a chance to make more adjustments. And that's really what you want when the guys come over here, not that they succeed right off, you know, right out of the chute.
Correct.
But that they have the ability to adapt, and he appears to have that. And so they've got Zelus Wheeler, who's also very adaptable. Obviously, he's proven that here. And so those things, and of course the other thing that I like is that Egor Omogi is back to offensively to where he was in his second season.
I'm glad you mentioned the offensively part, because a lot of times we've been seeing Kazuya Fujita at short, playing the position, especially late in games. So I'm not sure physically that he's able to play the same defense that he played. And he never really was a great defensive shortstop, but he was adequate.
Yeah, I think that shoulder surgery really took away his being a viable shortstop.
Well, I mean, I like him at short. He's okay. He's just not great. You know, he's not going to make those flashy plays and difficult plays, but I think he's serviceable at the position. I don't know that. I mean, obviously he's playing some, but they do make that change a lot of times and put an older guy out there at shortstop, which is usually when an older guy moves from shortstop to somewhere else on the field, not somewhere else on the field to shortstop.
Yeah, and then when Fujita's what's got a 934 OPS this year. So, I mean, I've always liked him in spots as a hitter. He's one of these guys who has, he's got a lot of skills at a lower level.
Mm-hmm.
So he can manage, you know, some days he'll look like Ichiro's, like Ichiro's teacher, the guy who taught Ichiro how to play baseball. And then the rest of the time he just looks lost, because it depends. I think it depends on, you know, who he's facing. There are pitchers he matches up against well. He doesn't have broad-based hitting skills, but he's got a lot of little ones that he's got a lot of tricks up his sleeve.
Yeah. Yeah, so, but yeah,
anyway,
37-year-old shortstop.
But you've got to love Rockten because again, they're almost the if you look under downtrodden and unheralded in the dictionary, they might have a see Rockten Eagles.
The gutty little Eagles. All right. All right, moving to the Central League now. Let's talk about Yoda of the Dragons now. I'm looking at him. He's the one guy, I think you mentioned it before we actually started taping, that he's the outlier. He's the guy who really didn't have any connection, wasn't coaching with the Dragons. He's really coming from the outside. And so I think he had
a long ago former Dragon.
Yeah, he has a lot to learn about the players, the philosophies, all those things Dragons-wise in recent years he hasn't been a part of. So I think, you know, I see that he wants to be aggressive a lot of times. He wants to let his pitchers pitch deep into games. He wants to get guys going on the base paths, certain guys, key guys. But I see him grasping a little bit in terms of what to do with the top of his lineup. And specifically, Ryosuke Hirata, who, you know, I think it's really hard to put a label on Hirata. I think before, I think the team was maybe labeling him as a middle-of-the-order guy, and they wanted some power from him, and they expected some power. But you see, Yoda has been leading him off most of the season. And in part, I think that's because of the production he's not getting when he leads off with Yota Kyoda or Yohei Oshima, those guys who are both left-handed hitters, and maybe sometimes he's trying to match up, so he wants a right-handed bat to break them up. I don't know. It's really hard. Hirata he's a medium power guy. He used to have some speed, but I think now he's past 30. I don't think speed is a major part of his game, but he takes good at bats. So I think Yoda likes to lead him off because he knows that he's going to get a grinder up there at the beginning of the game. The other two guys, maybe they're hitters, but they're not really, they don't strike any kind of fear into the pitcher, and they're not power hitters. They're not, you know, they're just scrappy guys at the plate. So I think that's why he's starting him off. I think Oshima, you know, batting third is kind of weird for me. He's not a number three in my mind, but maybe Kyota would be best suited for the three hole. But I talked to Kyota for a blog post that the Dragon Soul writer did last year, and Kyota said last year that he, when he's batting second, you know, there's a lot to think about. And, you know, obviously if the leadoff man gets on, then you might be asked to hit and run, you might be asked to bunt. You don't just go up there and swing the bat and try to do what you do. So he said the number two hole was just kind of a challenge for him. So I don't know. I look at that, and then I look at the, you know, the fact that Yoda puts on a lot of hit and run plays sometimes in certain combinations, and he lets his base stealers run in certain situations, but he's conservative in other ways. The Dragons just really aren't that talented. You know, Dion Viciedo, for all he did winning a batting championship last year, he hits the ball hard on the ground a lot, and he's leading the NPB in double plays at the moment, and maybe he'll get that that batting average and get back into the swing of things that, you know, like he hit in the second half, particularly in the second half of last year. But I think Yoda just has a big jigsaw puzzle to put together, and he's doing the best he can. But I just think there's a lack of talent there that he's going to have to suffer with, especially looking at his bullpen. you know, he's going to be working on his next closer, I believe. I'm not sure that Hiroshi Suzuki is, who's still really not able to locate well at times. He throws hard, but he lacks movement. Some of his pitches are flat. And secondary stuff, he's really not good at controlling it. So whenever he needs a pitch, he goes back to the same fastball. And Yoda has a lot of work to do.
I don't have much of a grasp for the Dragons. They're kind of a weird team, and I think playing in Nagoya Dome,
mm-hmm.
you know, sometimes your stadium contributes to the character of a team.
True.
Or
very
how a
true.
Team leans, and sometimes they keep leaning and leaning and leaning, and you know, this is how, and they start to think this is how we need to play ball. And
right.
I think that was the case. It was the case for decades in Yokohama, and it was the case for many, many years in Chiba. And I think in Nagoya, it's just gotten crazy. The idea that, well, you know, they do basically I know they're trying, you know, with Almonte, Zoilo Almonte and Diane Vicieto, they're trying to have power, but they're just not really succeeding. They really need, this is the team that badly needs somebody like Alex Guerrero hitting, you know, 35, 40 home runs a year.
Mm.
Because basically this is a team, and I tell you, this is a team that does a lot of little things right.
Yes.
And the biggest thing you can do in baseball is not make outs while turning the other guy's balls in play into outs.
Mm-hmm.
And the Dragons are one of the best teams in Japan at doing that.
Mm-hmm.
It's the rest of the part. It's the rest of the equation. It's getting, you know, big strikeouts. It's hitting for power.
Correct.
It's the things that you need to do on an individual level that they're really failing at, because they're really good at playing. This team plays really, really good defense, which is a Chunichi trait. But somehow, some years ago said, well, we're not going to hit home runs. So again, like, unlike Oryx, where I'm not certain they quite understand the concept, they probably said, we're not going to hit home runs, so let's not worry about having a big home run hitter. Let's just get the foreigners to hit home runs.
Also, I think, you know, they've lost some games trying to break in this catcher, Takuma Kato, who tried to even, one game I think was against the Swallows, he was going to throw through to second base and decided not to about halfway through his throw and ended up losing the ball, and it rolled out past shortstop and allowed the eventual winning run to go to score. So he's dealing with a lot of stuff. And they really don't have a catcher. They have a few guys who play the position, but none of whom you would want to keep out there and watch bat for any extended period. So he's dealing with a lot of stuff. I don't know how to grade him, though, because early on I noticed that he was not in the teaching mode. He's out there trying to win, but he's got this catcher he's trying to deal with. He's got the lineup he's trying to deal with. They did send Zoilo down to the minors, and they're hoping that he gets his stuff together so they can bring him back. And in the meantime, they're playing young guys out there sometimes in left field. And so anyway, I don't know how to grade him. I think he's doing okay, but they've got a lot of work over there to do before you can even look at the manager. So I think he gets an incomplete from me.
Interesting. I forgot about those grading systems. Been out of school too long. Incomplete. Yeah, I like that. Again, I think he's some degree. Well, yeah, you know, on the other hand, I do look at them a lot like Oryx, and I have to think that they have a... The other thing we have to understand dealing with Chunichi is the fact that they have serious budget issues.
Mm.
They can't keep their best players anymore. They can't keep their best foreign players anymore. They have to do everything on the cheap. So I think that is handicapping what the organization does. And I think that, you know, Yoda's coming in trying to put pieces together. I think I really liked the work he did in Rock Ten as pitching coach. I don't know how smart he is. He comes off as being, you know, he's kind of, you know, he's a longtime analyst on TV, so his job was sounding smart.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he is smart, but he seems like it. he's calm and friendly, and you know, he's not hyper or.
And we'll get to the hyper guy. Yeah.
Okay. Good. Okay. Good. I was afraid we weren't going to get any sort of neuroses here today, other than mine. Okay. Good. Well, so I don't have anything really to comment about Yoda, other than saying he's in a tough situation and some things aren't looking good.
Yeah. True. True. All right. So yeah, let's get to Mr. Yano of Hanshi. He is hyper. He is like a puppy. He's like having a puppy. I finally got a chance to see him the other day at Jingu. I saw him on Monday, and I shook hands with him and said, "Hey, you know, I haven't seen you since you became manager. Congratulations!" And I just observed him before the game. He was out stretching with some of the guys who were going to pitch batting practice. He's on the ground out there, so he still, you know, recently was a player, and you know, not long removed from that situation. So I think he's getting into the role. And, you know, he doesn't look like a guy who's stressed out, who's got a lot of pressure from all the media sources, all the fans, as well as you know, having to eye players and tell them they're not going to play, especially his former...
It's strange because one of the Tigers, the requirements of a Tigers manager is to be paranoid about the media.
Exactly.
What the media says.
Well, you know, I hope he gets sleep at night. He doesn't look as young as he used to already from the start of training camp. But hey, I had only seen him on TV up until Monday, and so now just looking him in the eye And I did see a little bit of age there, but I think that comes with the job, so that's just part of it. But I think when he obviously is able to write in the names Seiya, Kinami, and Koji Chikamoto into his lineup every day, that kind of makes his job a little bit easy. But as I was saying, when he doesn't write the name of Takashi Toritani and a guy he used to play with alongside with, sort of, so to speak, he was catching, Toritani was playing shortstop with the Tigers. That is difficult, and he has had to step into that. You know, I have to take over, and I have to show I'm the leader, and prove that I'm the leader right away. And again, he's had to do that with the media. He's had to do that in front of the fans or for the fans and for the players. So that's a lot of mental stress. But as far as the games, like I said, he's like a puppy. He's cheering along when things are going well. He's sulking when things are not going well. And he doesn't have any trouble showing those emotions on the bench. And it's fun to watch. It really is fun to watch. You know, you don't have to know the score or anything. You just have to have the camera. You flip on a Hanshin game and they're showing the manager on the bench. You know if they're winning or losing because you can tell on his face.
This little icon of...
He's the human icon. Yeah, that's the great nickname for him. We'll just call him Icon.
With focused on Yano. You used to say that about Kimiyasu Kudo of the Hawks, too. You just like a... Everything you could tell, whatever the team was doing by whether he was scowling or laughing.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a whole process I think they have going on out there at Hanshin, and I think he's doing fine. I'd seen some fans commenting and they didn't have flattering things to say, but he has to mix and match. I still think, with his Yusuke Oyama batting fourth and them thinking of him as a cleanup guy, I don't see him being a typical cleanup guy or developing into that kind of player, but maybe a number three, a guy who gets you a double or maybe some extra base hits, including home runs, maybe when you need it. But the guy can certainly play defense, and I think that's the one thing that I said it in the Central League prediction show that I think he would just make sure that they had tight defense and that everybody at least was in the right spots. And they really have played better defense than they have in the past couple seasons, in my opinion, just watching some of the games. And Oyama is a guy who can really pick it at third. I didn't know he was that, his hands were that quick and that he was going to contribute that way. And so it makes it easy, even if he's not hitting, to put him out there in the lineup because you know he's going to at least save you some runs if he doesn't score you any. So I think they have great pitching. I said that before the season. I really like all their pitching. From starters to relievers. So I think that when it all is said and done, they're going to be in the playoffs, and I think part of it is because Yano's going to lead them there.
Well, if it is because he's calm and, you know, calm in the sense is he doesn't get down on himself and he doesn't let extraneous, as you said. I think he's done well negotiating all that stuff. I think most, I go into my comfort area, which is talking about things that are not exactly to do with what's on the field, but with the Tigers, a big part of their manager's job is managing the media and managing expectations as much as it is, you know, choosing who goes into the lineup.
Correct.
And because if a Tigers manager lets them, the Daily Sports will be filling out the lineup card.
And the fans. they'll get the some input from the fans and contribute that.
Yeah, it'll be like, okay, oh, good. This is who we should be playing today. Let's do that. But the problem is, as soon as you do that, you're lost. And every manager, pretty much, except Okada recently, Hoshino and Okada and Kanemoto at the start, ended up doing that. You know, oh, well, I'm not winning, so I have to do what the media says. And I'm oversimplifying, of course, and all you Tigers people know better than me. But there's so much pressure to just give in and make it easy on yourself. You know, it's almost like you're conscious, like they're the conscious of the Greek chorus. You know, you go out to this like, we know who should be batting fourth, and the guy out there isn't it. And you know your life would just be so much easier just to say, okay, you do it and leave me alone. But as soon as you do that, you're lost.
Correct,
And Oyama didn't, you know, he's a guy who really, really, really hit a ton. I mean, and he hit a ton. He's one of these weird hitters who basically does nothing but hit home runs in the minors. And so he's flailed and struggled a lot. But one of the things, I think almost a universal thing, if you see somebody who's really good on the farm team and who flails and struggles a lot for year after year on the first team, there's almost one really good reason for that, is because as soon as he starts flailing and struggle on the first team after 50 at-bats or 60 at-bats, they get tired of looking at it. So they send him back down.
Right.
And then what happens is that time is not completely wasted, but a lot of it's wasted. You know, this happened also, and here's the thing, and I want to tell the Tigers fans, this happened, is exactly what happened with Hotaka Yamakawa of the Cebu Lions. And this is a guy who, when he was on the first team, he hit more home runs in Japan than anybody else in Japan. And I'm talking about Yuki Inagita. He hit more home runs. Takuya Nakamura hit more home runs. Tsutsugo, he hit more home runs. Shohei Ohtani, he hit more home runs. He hit them more often than any of these guys.
Mm-hmm.
But they just kept finding reasons. And, oh, we've got a first baseman, so we can't really play you. So they kept finding reasons why they couldn't use him. Oh, he strikes out too much. Oh, he doesn't do this. And, you know, but he was really good at hitting home runs. But they kept finding reasons not to use him. And it took him a real long time for everything to come together. And it basically also required that Ernesto Mejia stopped hitting.
Right,
and then they said, "Well, geez, let's try this guy who does nothing but hit home runs. Let's bring him up and see." And you know, as soon as they stuck him in there, and he had a new plan, and everything worked. But we gave him 50 at bats here and 100 at bats here, and after 5 years of 50 at bats, he's still not hitting. That's not a test. That's torture.
Yeah. So Oyama's getting his chance for sure.
Yes. So to see that, and I heard, you know, I did hear Tigers fans at the beginning of the season, why is he batting fourth? Why would anybody in their right mind bat this kid fourth? Why would anybody even want him in the lineup? And now he's hitting and people are going, people are so stupid to keep pitching to Oyama.
Right.
Like the same people. And I don't mean to be mean to you, but that's such a common thing to do. And the Tigers media, of course, is like, is the proverbial headless chicken, to go back to our proverb. I mean, they just go like, which way are we going to run today? Who are we going to pick on today?
Right.
So anyway, okay. So Yano, I like that. that interpretation. Yano is being his, I guess, you know, his, he's going to get a B for being his own guy.
Okay. And that's acceptable. Now,
and
what
with Hanshin, that's it. That is actually an A.
Probably.
If you can do it, if you can be who you are and know what you're doing and shut out all that stuff and with the resources that the Tigers have available to them, you should be in the playoffs every year.
Well, yeah, and they have great pitching resources, and if they scramble up enough offense behind Oyama, Marte, and the other guys, then they will be in the playoffs. Quickly, one note on one manager who is not new, but is probably new to this situation, and that's Alex Ramirez with the Yokohama Bay Stars. And the owner recently, Tomoko Namba, came out and addressed the situation with the losses. And while it was nothing new, it wasn't really, she apologized and didn't really say anything. It wasn't a vote of confidence. It wasn't a vote of non-confidence or anything. It just, she just apologized. And while I didn't think it much of it, I thought it was, the team is at the moment on Sunday morning here when we're taping, it's 13-23. So that's 10 games under. And that's not a good place to be at any point in the season. So I don't blame her for making a statement, but I do find it concerning that this early in the season that they found it necessary to make a statement about Alex Ramirez in particular, about his job. I know that the fans are complaining. There's already uproar. So that's something to keep an eye on.
Well, I think I would blame her for apologizing, because I think that just puts additional pressure on the team. I mean, and I said this before, when the Giants were going through their really nasty streak a few years ago, record losing streak, the problems didn't come, you know, it didn't, within the team, everyone was good. And I don't think that's necessarily a good thing or a bad thing, but the point is nobody was panicking. You know, keep doing the right things. That was the message, we got your back. But the front office people came in and said, how come you guys aren't panicking? How come there's not gray matter on the floor here? Because, you know, how come some player hasn't been beaten to a bloody pulp by his teammates?
And what are you people doing? We're losing.
Exactly. How come you haven't blamed somebody for this catastrophe? And having worked in Yomiuri, and John can't say this, but that's how Yomiuri works. I mean, I'm going to be mean, but what the lesson I learned in Yomiuri is that if you want to succeed at Yomiuri, you have to be really good at finding the person whose fault something is that isn't you.
Hashtag high heat.
And some of those Yomiuri executives are, you can see how they rose to the top. They're really good at the principal skill in that company. So for the owner of a team that's laid back and organized like the DeNA Bay Stars to come out and say, I apologize to the fans for us losing, because sometimes you lose in baseball, is really, really not a good sign.
Yeah, I don't like it.
You know, she felt bad. She felt bad for the, well, we all felt bad for the fans, but she should have come out and said, we're doing our best and we're going to keep doing our best.
Right. Right.
And we're not going to apologize for trying our hardest.
All right. Let's try fielding questions. All right. So we got an MP3 from Mike in DC. Let's check it out.
Hey, John and Jim. One of the most popular new strategies in Major League Baseball is the use of openers, or bullpenning a game, where rather than start with one of your worst starting pitchers, teams are using a series of relievers to cover a game. I was wondering, what is the statistical basis for this new strategy? And more importantly, which MPB team should be doing it more often? Which MPB team should do it the most? I know the Fighters have already started exploring it. Thanks so much, guys, and keep up the great work on the podcast.
All right, just a quick note. Mike said he got to produce a podcast, and so he said, please listen to it, John. And so I did, and it was awesome. So I'm going to tweet it out. I hope I remember to do that on Monday morning. I'm going to tweet it out. I listened to every second of it. The sound quality was fantastic. I'm really jealous. So I wrote back to Mike and said, how do we get to make our sound quality as good as this one? But anyway, I'll tweet that out on Monday. So as far as his question, the teams that need to do it. I think you look at the Tampa Bay Rays, who coined the term opener, and I think Jim and I talked about it before we started, and I thought it was more because they just really didn't have a good enough rotation with depth to fill. But he also said, Jim said that they wanted a guy to come out and just throw that first inning like he was throwing the last inning. So that's why they used, what was his name? I can't even remember his name because he was a San Francisco Giant. Sergio
Romo.
Yeah, Sergio
Romo. The first closer. Yeah. Sergio the first.
Sergio, yeah, the opener. So, so if you look at it that way and you look at teams that maybe don't have that really good pitcher, a quality enough guy, a number six guy, they want to run out there every day and need to do this. I think you look at SoftBank. SoftBank can do everything or anything it wants. So I'm going to just set the Hawks aside there. I'm looking at a team like Yomiuri, actually, because they're so deep, and they've been using a lot of guys at that number six, in the number six rotation spot. So I'm thinking they can throw, there's a million guys they can just bring up from the farm, but guys who are on the staff already, Ryoma Nogami, Kyosuke Takagi, Seiji Tahara, and Chiaki Tone, just to name a few or a group. And Kazuto Taguchi's in there, a former starter who's in the bullpen now, so I think they could do it. In terms of the teams that need to, I think when you look at some of the bullpen ERAs in both leagues, I don't know. Maybe I'm looking at the Fighters, and I think they're the perfect team for this. The other ones, the Marines, I wouldn't do it with them. I
do it with the Swallows.
The Swallows? Really?
I would, because I think they have, and it's not every pitcher, it's not every starter, but I think they've got a bunch of guys who are sitting around who are thinking, you know, the other advantage of it, well, first of all, just to be correction, and the person who came up with the opener, or at least publicized, was Brian Kenny. And the logic is this: the first inning is a crucial inning when the most runs are scored, and if you can get your starting pitcher away from that first inning and have him come in the second inning, it makes him getting five innings, six innings a lot easier.
It's still his first inning, though.
Yes, but he's not facing the top of the order.
Well, yeah, but he might start with the cleanup hitter.
Oh, give me a break.
I'm just saying, it's still his first inning. I mean, if he's having trouble throwing a good first inning.
I'm saying the problem is not necessarily because it's his first inning. It's because it's the opposing team's first inning.
Okay. It seems like I hit a nerve there.
Yeah. It's like, let me go. I mean, when did you take a DNA transplant from me and have to shoot off of oil all of a second? I'm the one who interrupts around here. Shut up. So the point being that the starting pitcher comes out and he doesn't have to get through that. You know, he doesn't have to save pitches for the second time. The reliever comes in. He's not worried about going through the lineup three times or two times even. He's just going to get the first three, four guys, bam, gone. So you need somebody like that Swallows armada of middle relievers. You basically want a middle reliever to come in, start the first inning, get out of the first inning, and then have the starter come in, warm up against the bottom of the order, and then worry about what he's going to have to pitch the second and third times through the order instead of having to do it in the first inning. You know, I got to save this pitch for the fifth inning. So that was the whole logic behind it. I think there are teams which it works. I think it could work with any team provided that A, they've got middle relievers who need work, and B, they've got maybe starting pitchers who need a little boost. So I'm just thinking, okay, well, let's see. How many teams have no starting pitchers and need a little boost? Okay, well, that's zero. So it basically comes down to your relievers. And, of course, the third one is dealing with change and dealing with the players themselves and dealing with people who think it's not baseball. So, you know, you have to negotiate that as it being different. And that's part of the manager's job, too. So.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, in terms of MPB, I think the Fighters are the perfect team to do that. And I think it's, I don't know that it's working for them, but they'll make it work if it's not. And I think that everybody will adjust. Anyone else, I don't see that really working for them other than the Giants or maybe the Hawks. Okay.
Well, I think it could work with Oryx too, but I think that's just they're in their program. It's not something that Oryx would really try. But you know, SoftBank has tried it, because if Robert Suarez start wasn't an opener, and I don't think it was publicized as one, but you take a guy who's making his first professional start and goes one inning, I think nobody wanted to talk about it because he gave up, I think, 4 runs in the first inning. But if that wasn't an attempt to see if the opener thing is going to work, then I don't know what it was. Because they brought in the starting pitcher from the second inning.
Yeah, like I said, they probably can if they want to. So
they don't want to say it. They might want to do it, but nobody wants to say it.
Exactly. All right, and we don't want to say goodbye, but we're going to have to. So thank you again for listening. Anyone else with an MP3 like Mike, send it to yakyujohn@gmail.com or hit us up on Twitter @JBWPodcast or leave us a note on the Facebook page. We will talk to you again next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballpark and back in Japan.